From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Noe Valley.
We are from Hayward.
We're from the Inner Sunset.
I live in the Inner Sunset.
I live in Sausalito.
Coming up, we catch up with a couple we met a few years ago who were using a bus line as their shelter. They're off the bus now, but still living on the streets.
Hope is definitely one of those hard things to keep going.
You know, just because we're lower on the socioeconomic ladder does not invalidate us as human beings. You cannot brand us non-persons because we don't carry home a check every week.
And we'll learn the story behind this week's audiograph mystery sound.
To me, I like it, though. Sometimes I come and stand right here and just listen to it. I don't even go in there and buy nothing in Burger King.
We're facing the music today on Cross Currents. San Francisco recently created the Department of Homelessness and Supportive Housing and named Jeff Kosicki its first director. Kosicki used to be executive director of the Hamilton Family Center, a nonprofit that provides services to homeless families. Kosicki spoke to KALW's Matt Martin this morning on the KALW program Your Call. Here's part of that conversation.
You're kind of now the kind of flag bearer for this mayoral initiative, reorganizing services within the city. I think there are a lot of people who are just skeptical of mayoral initiatives around homelessness because there have been a number of them. Now, I mean, you might argue there's been some successes in that process. But I mean, I just kind of think about that kind of mission statement of your department. That sounds like a very, very big thing to take on. So explain what just are the fundamental changes that are happening organizationally and then how you think that can actually ultimately get to that place.
Yeah, I think there are two major changes that we need to make. So the city has all these wonderful programs, both run by city employees, and some of them are most of it provided by wonderful nonprofit organizations that have been on the cutting edge of addressing homelessness, not only in the U.S., but internationally. We need to take all those programs and operate them under a single strategy, rather than having 50 different organizations sort of running in 50 different directions, rather than making it so that homeless people have to get in multiple lines, sign up on multiple waiting lists to get services, be assessed, you know, 15 different times by 15 different case managers. We need to bring all that together. We need to have a system where if you are homeless, you're assessed once. That information goes into a single system that is used by all service providers in the city. And we'll direct you to the appropriate resource, and then we'll be able to track an individual or family through the system to help make sure they're getting the appropriate resources that will lead to exits to homelessness. That doesn't really exist right now, but we will have that up and running hopefully within a year, and I think that's going to make a huge difference.
So does that mean that the city's the kind of intake process or that first kind of – does that mean the city is organizing that or that nonprofits will be putting that information into that central database? How does it work?
So the city's going to be organizing the system. We're working right now on developing a plan for the department and really digging into numbers to understand what the needs are, where the gaps in the system are. We're going to take that information and develop a system. We're going to use we will be using cutting-edge technology that will allow us to develop these data systems that the city will be operating. We'll be, you know, working with private sector partners who we'll be contracting with to develop and then operate certain parts of the system. And then the nonprofit organizations who we contract with and the city staff who do direct services will all use this system together to be able to both help each individual in a very holistic way, but also to look at the whole system and see where are we doing well, where are the problems, are we seeing an uptick in family homelessness, is this program really successful so that we can react in real time to what we're seeing happening out on the streets.
But how much of the problem to this point is that we don't understand what the problem is, and how much is it that there's not the will to, say family homelessness? I know that's something that is on the rise. It's something that's been, we've seen that increasing. You know, how much of it is about just a kind of like, a will to go, like really go after those problems? Because obviously you're going to have the data side of things, but then there seem to be some intractable things that are not.
I believe that there is the will. I don't know that we have all the resources we need, which is why we're putting a sales tax three of the members of the Board of Supervisors are putting a sales tax measure on the ballot. and $50 million of the funding will go to scale up some of these successful programs. So I think that there's the will. I think we need more resources, but I also think we need to be smarter about how we address the problem. Like right now, when people talk about homelessness, oftentimes they just sort of lump everybody into one bucket, the homeless. It's much more complex than that. There's youth homelessness, family homelessness, seniors, people who are chronically homeless, high users of the medical system. They all have very different needs. They all need housing, but how we get there is different for each population. We really just need to break down the problem into digestible bites, if you will, and then just start working at them and, you know, chipping away at it.
That was KALW's Matt Martin speaking with Jeff Kositsky, the first director of the San Francisco Department of Homelessness and Supportive Housing. You can hear the full episode at KALW.org and tune into your call every weekday at 10 a.m. right here on KALW. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hanat Baba. Though it may not always make the headlines, Santa Clara County has the ninth biggest homeless population in the United States. 2 years ago, KALW reporters Isabel Angel and Angela Johnston spent the night on Bus 22, a 24-hour bus line that runs from Palo Alto to San Jose. It's the only overnight bus route in Santa Clara County. So for over a decade, people have been using the 22 at night for shelter. On the bus, they met a couple, Michael and Elizabeth Garber.
Yeah, there's the Motel 22 or Hotel 22. That's the big one I've heard. I call it home.
My name is Elizabeth Garber. I've been homeless for about 8 months so far, riding Bus 22 as many times at night as we have money for.
The bus is dry, it has seats, but it's clearly not a permanent solution. The Garbers said they were worried their stuff would get stolen. It was hard to get more than 3 hours of sleep since you had to get on and off the bus.
Oh yeah, I've missed interviews because I've fallen asleep on the bus in the morning and missed my stop. I wake up, I've missed court dates. And so, yeah, I don't know how many opportunities I've lost because of it, you know.
We wanted to find out what had happened to the Garbers since we last spoke to them. So KALW's Angela Johnston followed up and found that although they left the bus just a few months after that original story aired, they still haven't been able to move off the streets.
The Garbers tell me to meet them where they now spend nights in downtown San Jose. I get there at 6:30 a.m., and that's cutting it close because they have to be up and out of their sleeping spot before the security guard comes and opens up the building at 7.
Okay. We are late.
Yes, we are.
Michael is pretty shy, so Elizabeth is kind of the spokesperson for the couple. She tells me they've been sleeping at this place for about 10 months, and they don't want to lose it, which is why she asks me if I could please not mention the name of the building.
So how was last night?
It was actually pretty mild.
Here, they can sleep next to each other. In a shelter, they'd most likely be separated. And their sleep isn't interrupted as much, like it was on Bus 22. Elizabeth says trying to find affordable housing seems out of the picture right now.
The rent is excessive. Cost of living is excessive. It's just all around excessive.
She packs up their belongings and stuffs them into a black suitcase, a fleece blanket, a big comforter, and a blue tarp that they place on the cement. It's starting to tear in the middle. They'll have to get a new one soon, she tells me.
I mean, I know there are a lot of people who like to use the shopping cart method, but that prevents us from going into the library.
That's where they spend most of their days, hanging out, searching for jobs on the internet, and using the quiet space to make phone calls. One call Elizabeth wants to make today is to a sporting goods store to replace Michael's backpack.
This is what this is supposed to look like, right? I've only had this for 3 months.
Oh my gosh, yeah. That's rip.
But before they go to the library,
we are going to go to the San Fernando Light Rail Station and to head to my mother's place and get showers, me and my husband at least, showers, new clothes, and drop off some of this excess baggage. And we at least have another backpack that he can use.
Elizabeth says they aren't allowed to stay there much longer than that, a few hours, three times a week. Her mom has a small apartment, can't afford to house two extra people, and her partner doesn't get along with Michael.
Let's head down to the ramp.
For the Garbers, being unable to stay at her mother's house is just one bit of bad luck in a long string of it. We make our way to the light rail station, a quarter mile from their sleeping spot, and Elizabeth tells me how it all started back in 2010. She was 26, Michael was 23, and they had a young son. She says they were trying to make ends meet on $600 a month, with all three of them living in one bedroom in a shared apartment.
We tried to do the best we could under the circumstances we had. There were times where our son was eating ground beef and vegetables and a little bit of starch, and him and I were only having rice and salt and pepper, or potatoes and salt and pepper.
At one point, Michael got in trouble with the law, and their son was put into the foster care system. Since then, Michael's record has made it hard for him to find work. They lived in a few more low-income apartments and then crashed at Elizabeth's mother's apartment before she couldn't house them anymore. On May 13th, 2013, the Garbers became homeless, and they've been in and out of it ever since.
Half the time, we can get it through on our own, and if we can't, well, we fake it until we make it.
Last fall, Elizabeth thought things were looking up. She got a job at a deli counter in a Safeway, but she tells me they fired her after 2 months. Maybe it was because she wasn't used to standing for 8 hours a day, she says. Or maybe it was because her manager found out she was homeless.
I didn't want to lose that job. That job was hope for me.
When the light rail comes, Elizabeth and Michael grab their belongings and hop on.
You have a great day. We'll see you later.
Bye.
I'm not allowed to go to Elizabeth's mother's house, so we meet up again in the afternoon at the public library.
Hello.
Hi.
I find Elizabeth and Michael set up in the back at a booth. Packaged food is spread out over the table, cans of SpaghettiOs, cookies, and chocolate milk. This is their breakfast, lunch, and their dinner. Elizabeth says they went grocery shopping earlier this afternoon with the remaining food stamps. Right now, they're both hunched over their laptops playing a game called Minecraft. The fans on their computers let out a loud hum.
Why do you like playing the game?
It relaxes me. It's a way to be creative, and creativity kind of helps me mellow out. It's just one of those things that it helps me get through my day.
In the game, you can build different worlds out of blocks. You can even grow food and tame animals.
I mean, in Minecraft, this is my house. I built this from ground up. It still needs work, but it at least has a roof on it.
Elizabeth plays this game almost every day after she's looked for work and made all her necessary phone calls. Earlier today, she got through to the sporting goods store.
They already have the replacement backpack waiting with his name on it.
And she made a few other phone calls on what she calls her Obama phone, a free federal phone service for low-income and homeless people.
I called social services, which, as usual, social services did not get back to me. They were supposed to call us for an interview so that we could have her food stamps continued next week.
Here, she also likes to work on a novel she's been writing for over 20 years and catch up on Facebook. They haven't seen their son since he was adopted a few years ago, but she can look at recent pictures of him online.
Oh, look at this. Three-piece suit, okay? He has definitely got his father's ability to wear a suit.
She also likes to watch funny animal videos.
This could help. Watching animals do their thing.
It's these types of things that keep her happy and give her faith their situation will get better.
Hope is
Definitely one of those hard things to keep going.
I ask them what they hope for. They say they simply want people to recognize that even though they don't have a home, they're still human beings.
Not all of us want to be on the streets. Not all of us put ourselves here. We need to stop stereotyping the homeless.
Elizabeth says she hates it when people automatically assume that because they sleep on the streets, they're alcoholics and addicted to drugs. She says she's never touched drugs in her life.
You know, just because we're lower on the socioeconomic ladder does not invalidate us as human beings. You cannot brand us non-persons because we don't carry home a check every week.
Michael would prefer if people called it houselessness and not homelessness.
That's why they say home is where the heart is. It's houselessness, physical, actual buildings, actual places to live, you know, because if home is where your heart is, well, technically, wherever she goes.
He points to Elizabeth.
Technically, that's, you know.
He's home.
Yeah. Be it here or, you know, hopefully not 5 miles under the ocean, but you get the idea.
Elizabeth's goal is to find a job first before they start looking for housing. They've been on one affordable housing waitlist for over 8 years. In Santa Clara County, there are over 25,000 families on the waitlist for Section 8 housing. Even if she and Michael were able to get jobs, they worry they still might not be able to afford affordable housing.
Because this isn't living. It's not in the romanticized version of it. This is like, okay, I'm alive, I'm in a physical building for like another 20 minutes. I want to be able to go outside because I want to, not because I have to.
At 8 p.m., the library closes and the Garbers have to go back outside. They pack their stuff up again, throwing away the empty cans of SpaghettiOs and putting their leftover food into Ziploc bags.
This can go here.
We wait for the free downtown shuttle that takes us back to their sleeping spot a few blocks away.
Are we getting off here?
Yes, we're getting off here.
They unpack their things and get ready to settle down for the night. Elizabeth points to the lights and the security camera on the overhang above them.
We feel safe. When they turn these lights on, they just made us feel safer.
It's 9 o'clock when I say goodbye. They'll stay up for another hour, talking about their day and charting out how to tackle the next one. In San Jose, for Cross Currents, I'm Angela Johnston.
This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. Now it's time for Audiograph, the Bay Area's sonic signature. All week long, we've been playing you this sound.
To me, I like it, though. Sometimes I come and stand right here and just listen to it. I don't even go in there and buy nothing in Burger King.
Every day, we've asked you what the sound was and where we recorded it. But the inspiration behind this week's Audiograph actually started with a different question. Not where the sound was coming from, but why it was there in the first place. Listener Bridget Boylan in San Francisco was wondering.
Wondering why the Burger King at Market and 8th Street started broadcasting pretty loud music.
Real loud music. So she sent the question to Hey Area, KALW's crowdsourced reporting project. Now, this particular Burger King is in the same mid-market area that's long been a concern for city officials, a popular hangout for drug dealers, a resting spot for the city's homeless. It's also home to Twitter, Uber, concert halls, and the symphony. So while classical music is no stranger to the area, it's usually heard behind closed doors. We sent KALW's Holly J. McDee to find out why it's been brought out onto the street.
Up until around 7 a.m., the corner of Market and 8th Street, right above the Civic Center BART stop, sounds like your typical street corner. The rhythmic hum of cars, workers rushing past, City Hall looms like a giant in the background. Nothing unusual to the ears, until...
Hey,
Bach? Beethoven? Maybe Mozart? What are they doing here? The music is coming from the speakers outside the Burger King, the fast food joint, home of the Whopper.
So the corner in front of Burger King was becoming increasingly problematic.
That's Tracy Everwine, the executive director of the Central Market Community Benefit District. They're a local nonprofit made of property owners in the mid-market neighborhood who pay property tax to improve the area. Everwine says her group was receiving complaints about sidewalk congestion and urine smells. People were afraid to walk in front of the restaurant.
I had read many years ago about the UK using classical music in their subway systems to curtail gang activity and graffiti.
Her group worked with Burger King to set up the outdoor speakers that now play classical music all day, every day, from about 7 a.m. to 11 p.m., flooding the corner with sound.
And so the music just said, hey, like this, you know, this is a public sidewalk, and we need to make sure it's usable and welcoming for everybody.
Well, maybe not everybody. Leslie Haddock, who works for the San Francisco Homeless Coalition, had a sinking feeling when she first heard the music. She said she was worried it was yet another attack on the neighborhood's homeless population.
We've seen an uptick in like what is called anti-homeless architecture, where businesses are putting in spikes on any like clear surfaces so that people can't sit down. We had a Catholic church, and now other groups have been using sprinkler systems to keep homeless people from sleeping or sitting down.
This isn't the only time businesses have used sound to discourage loitering. A few years ago, operators at the nearby Bill Graham Auditorium started blasting sinister sounds into the streets, jackhammers, chainsaws, and wailing noises, to prevent people from sleeping on the sidewalk. Haddock says she's troubled by what she sees as the escalation of efforts to push people out of public areas.
So it's a kind of the quintessential tale of two cities in San Francisco and part of this broader context. Like, you see absolute poverty and destitution, like, right up against extreme wealth.
I don't know, it's like a class war, kind of.
Melissa Welsh has been homeless for decades. She says the music is beautiful, but it drives her nuts.
And then they put this music on so loud that you can't hear each other talking. So people stopped coming, you know, and that's obviously what they wanted to have happen.
Welsh survives by selling whatever she can find on the street, from books to old computer parts. She's one of many people who would set up their wares out on the sidewalk here in front of Burger King. With the San Francisco Symphony, Opera House, and Ballet all nearby, Welsh says she thinks the people who've come to enjoy a show don't want to look at poverty.
A bunch of, you know, classy people will show up, and there's all these junkies and you know, no-gooders hanging out, having sidewalk sales, you know, and unsavory characters in the city, you know, and people get uncomfortable. And so, but I get uncomfortable when they have all those kind of people coming, acting all snotty.
Tyree Bonner isn't homeless, but he spends a lot of time outside the Burger King. He's a crystal meth addict, and this is a popular spot for drug dealers. For him, the classical music is usually just background noise. But sometimes, when he stops to listen, he thinks about his life and cries. With or without the music, he's still in the grip of addiction. He misses his family and needs help.
From an addict point of view, they need to just take that down and put something up that's gonna work for the people that's hanging out. Give us something that we can utilize. Yeah. Give us something that we really can utilize, that we can call, and that we can embrace, and that we can grab on. Come out here and ask us, what do we want? What's going on in our world?
Tracy Everwine, who helped put up the music, says it has started conversations, though maybe not the kind Tyree Bonner is talking about.
I've gotten calls from people that I haven't heard from in, you know, 5 years saying, hey, is that you guys? It's really a great addition. Bart, a representative from BART, called to thank us and said that they wanted to do something similar in their stations.
Other businesses in the mid-market area may also be jumping on the bandwagon. Everwine is working with a couple of businesses on 6th Street to help them set up music. Welat Yüksel owns a Mediterranean restaurant right down the street from Burger King. Since they started playing music, he says, more people have crowded outside his business.
Everybody knows what neighborhood is. This is a civic center. It's a central, the headquarter of homeless people. And the streets are full. Yeah. And nobody's doing anything about that.
The streets are full, and they're about to get louder. At Burger King, I'm Holly J. McDeed for Cross Currents.
Our winner this week was Susan Ma. Congratulations, Susan. We're sending you a KALW t-shirt. And many thanks to listener Bridget Boylan for the story idea. She submitted a question through Hey Area, KALW's crowdsourced reporting project. You can submit your own. Just go to kalw.org. Well, that's all for us. Our team includes Bonnie Chan, Jurgen Klem, Leela Day, Nina Gensler-Debs, Chris Hoff, Angela Johnston, Lucy Kang, Justine Lee, Ted Muldoon, Raja Shah, Stephen Short, and Judy Silber. Today's show was engineered by James Rollins. The line producer was Hannah Kingsley Ma. Today is Casey Miner's last day at KALW. She has been an amazing editor, brilliant, funny. We will miss her, but we're happy to know she's making her own awesome podcast, The Specialist. Definitely check it out. Our managing editor is Jen Chien. Managing producer is Julie Kane. Ben Trefney is our news director. Our theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Paba.